Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Box Set Pod, this week brought to you by... Hey, it's the first podcast of 2017, isn't that exciting? Lovely to be with you, and thank you for joining us. You can email us, get in touch, it's always nice, studio@theboxsetpod.com. On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about Sherlock, which is a well-known television series around the world. We'll be doing that. Speaking of emails, I do want to give somebody a mention. But first, let's say hello to who we have this evening, which is our work experience boy, Jack, who is at university and he's preparing for an exam tomorrow. So he comes to us live from, is it Leeds University?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, from the library.
Leeds University Library. Yeah, look out for ghosts, Jack. Look out for ghosts. The ghosts of learned scholars. And speaking of learned scholars, live from his shed in London, it's Ben Hilton. Good evening, Ben.
Hello, good evening.
So Jack brings the perspective of a young, naive, Bambi-like creature that is likely to get shot. And Ben brings the experience of the hunter holding the gun. Jamie and I will sit somewhere in the middle. And we might be joined by others as time goes on. But thank you very much to the person who sent us an email. We did say we were going to be talking this week about Goliath, but we're going to push that to next week. And Ray from Oxford is his name. He emailed with lots to say about Goliath. We will come back to that next week. But a quick show of hands, has anyone here started or watched any of Goliath yet? Jamie?
I've watched it all.
Watched it all. Ben?
I've watched the first episode.
Oh, well, if you can join us next week, well, that would simply be wonderful. And Jack?
Not even heard of it.
Okay, it's on Amazon Prime, Jack. Have you got access to that?
I'm sure I can find a way to access it somehow.
It's really very worth accessing, I think. But this evening we're going to be talking Sherlock. Now, full disclosure, I've been a fan of Sherlock Holmes, the stories, for many years. Used to read them. I think I read all of the short stories at one point, which is a lot of short stories. And so I was very excited when the ex-League of Gentlemen member, Mark Gatiss, was coming back with a version himself that he's done with Stephen Moffat, who is famous for Doctor Who, for creating lots of the modern Doctor Whos. Where are we all then in Sherlock universe? Benjamin?
I've watched it all. I watched the last one last night.
Okay. Can I just check? The one before this last one, the series before this last one, ended where this one began. Hang on a minute. That's obvious.
That's right, yeah. But there was one in the middle.
Okay.
There was a Christmas special last year.
I've watched them all apart from that Christmas special then. Jack, you've watched them all, have you?
I watched them all several times, and like you, have read the books too.
That's interesting.
Bringing a very student perspective, very studious of you.
Yeah. Jamie?
Yeah, watched them all, read a few of the books, and have a appreciation of the work.
Okay, so normally we have a guinea pig who's only watched one episode. Let's flip that around slightly. You're going to have to persuade me to watch the one that I haven't watched, which is the Christmas special that's sat in between the two series. And how shall we do this? Shall I explain why I haven't watched that one?
Yeah, go ahead.
I did not enjoy this Sherlock Holmes. There was an episode at the beginning of the series before last, which was the wedding episode. Does everyone remember the wedding episode?
Yep. Yep.
This episode began, the first 10 minutes of it was a jewellery heist, and Detective Lestrade, or whatever his name is, their detective friend, was on the hunt for some people who were supposed to be doing a heist, and he got there, and after 10 minutes of build-up, turned out nobody was there. And I thought, oh, then the case is going to be, where is this happening? Where is this heist actually happening, or what's going on? And draft Sherlock him because Lestrade is useless. No, the whole point of that first 15 minutes, it felt like, was just to say that he was useless. The jewellery heist was never mentioned again, as far as I remember. It's completely irrelevant to the whole plot. And it sums up why I dislike this new series, because, as in the new telling, because they don't, it's not a TV show where Sherlock Holmes the detective solves a case. It's a TV series, just like Stephen Moffat did with Doctor Who, where they stack on, instead of solving a case, they stack on all of this personal backstory nonsense constantly. Like that wedding episode was all about, the undertones was like, are Sherlock and Watson gay? And are they really in love with each other? Is that getting in the way of this wedding? And all of this, like, soap opera-like melodrama that's put on the top of it all just gets in the way for me. That said, these last episodes, I thought, were much better than that series. I enjoyed the last episodes. So that's where I stand. Mel is joining us in a moment from Kansas as well. So we'll say hello to Mel, and then we'll get where everybody else stands. Mel, hi.
Hello, how are you guys?
Yeah, good. Welcome to the podcast. I've just explained that I am a huge Sherlock Holmes fan, but I'm not a fan of the melodrama and the telling of most of the recent stuff, about all of the Benedict Cumberbatch stuff. I think it's got some wonderful things about it, but I'm highly critical of it.
Have you never? Did you like it when it, the first series? Howell, were you a fan of the first series?
Yeah, first episode and those first three, I thought were quite close. There was a fair bit of backstory and personal life, but for me at that time, that was part of establishing this new modern telling of Sherlock, and that was quite nice. It was almost like, oh, we're catching up with the audience, and we're saying it's not a two-dimensional thing, it's three-dimensional, and that's nice. But they also had really clear cases. So one of them, I remember the Chinese vase one, you know, it begins, who is breaking into this bank, and then it ties in with the same person is possibly doing this thing at this British Museum and all sorts of stuff. But it was like the books. It was Sherlock has a case to solve, and then he tries to solve it. Watson's wife is one of my least favourite subplots of anything I've ever seen in my life.
Completely agree.
Absolutely, totally agree.
They wasted that. They wasted it.
It's so annoying. And the fact that she keeps turning up in this freaking video that she filmed until the very end. It's like, go away, you died.
But also a great example of the melodrama that I'm talking about is in the, you know, this thing ended with her voice, and this thing ended with her walking around. You know, when she was walking around the room in his imagination, talking to them, circling him. Towards the end, the very last scene, she's walking around going, yes, but you... That was so GCSE drama school that I couldn't believe they would... It was embarrassing to watch it.
Yeah, I kind of agree with pretty much everything you say. I love the first two series, and ever since I've gone off it for a lot of the reasons you've described, and... but I even don't like the last series. The last few episodes have been really... Like, take, for example, episode 2, The Lying Detective, which looks for a while like it's all about a case. Mm-hmm. For a while, it's about, oh, he's going to this hospital to find out if this guy's a serial killer. And it feels like, oh, genuinely, we're getting an actual Conan Doyle-style Sherlock case to solve. But all that case is about is trying to get Watson and Sherlock back together.
Yeah.
That's all it's about. And it's like, no, no, it's not. No, that's not what you're doing. It's meant to be about solving the mystery. And the mystery you don't even give one about the mystery. Oh, I just solved that by recording him with a walkie-talkie thing. You know, it's just like, it's ridiculously, like, it just takes all the wonder of what what Sherlock is, and that's mm-hmm. almost like a side note to the love affair and the relationships and the soap opera and melodrama that goes on between the characters.
But it's not it's just ridiculous. A side note, is it, Ben? It's also a modern critique of famous people doing terrible things.
Well, I don't think it's as clever as that. For me, the first two seasons were really good. Those six episodes, all individual episodes, didn't intertwine too much. They were successful for all the right reasons. And then they had the Christmas episode that was quite good. But then once we got into season three, and season three is after they fall off the rooftop, you get into this. I think they're a victim of their own sort of success in a way, and they don't know where to take it. Mm-hmm. It's very big globally, and they start to create all kind. They basically start to do what I think Stephen Moffat is often heavily criticised for, which is a lot of fan service.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of geek out. And they start to sort of interplay things and do clever shocks and, you know, twists and turns that are just there if you really have concentrated. And they don't serve the story. They serve the viewer in a very, like, quick response sort of, oh, wow, you know, clickbait way.
Are you so right about the thing about them being victim of their own success? It's like they fail to realise that it's successful because, one, they've got great actors. Two, they can write a script, good. It's shot really well. But they're mainly successful because Sherlock Holmes is a great character and those are great stories. And what they've taken as success is it's almost like they've gone, oh, it's the subplot stuff, it's the melodrama and it was the soap opera stuff that people are a fan of. It's like, no.
It's the fan fiction. They're writing fan fiction.
They're writing fan fiction. You're absolutely right. And so then we get into series four, which is just finished. Now, without wanting to give too much away, if you take all the plots of those three episodes, you don't develop forwards at all. All three of them are explorations into past events, and you learn something new and shocking about them. So all they are is plot twists. What you think you've seen, actually, it wasn't that, it was something else. But from when season four started to where it ended, have the characters progressed at all? No, because the whole thing was flashback
I have to disagree just a tiny bit there, Ben. I think, and are we not doing any spoilers for season four, for series four?
Oh, good
Let's
point.
Do it.
Let's just do spoilers. Right, tonight's podcast is bloody spoilers. And by the way, Jack, we're coming to you last on purpose because I know you're the biggest fan. So we're just going to trample all over your heart.
No,
give you a chance.
Now I am a big fan, but I've got my fair share of critiques here, and
You're right, Mel. It's all right to be a big fan and have critiques with this because it's the BBC and they've got a big bloody budget and they're wasting time. They're wasting valuable real estate. Speaking of a waste of time, please welcome to the podcast Matthew Wandless, also from London. Matt, we're also well into heavy criticism of Sherlock Holmes. Catch us up very quickly. Are you up to? Have you watched all of Sherlock?
Yeah.
Okay. In a noise rather than a word, how do you feel about Sherlock? Okay, so let's go back to Mel. Let's go back to Mel because I always rudely interrupt her. Mel,
you do.
So you're a big fan, but you've got caveats.
I do, but I wanted to say Ben was saying that we saw no forward progress with any of the characters, but I do think even though that, you know, that ending in the, I don't know, the bunker or whatever. With the violin duet, it was a bit happy families there, but I think if you tilt your head and you squint, you could argue that this shows us that Sherlock really has grown more empathetic and compassionate because he is reaching out to his sister.
I guess I mean stories.
So
moving the story on.
moving the story on? I don't know. I mean, we solved Redbeard, well, and wasn't that kind of the whole point?
Yeah, but surely the problem is that they've spent all the cards, isn't it? They have developed Sherlock to the point that, like, once you get, if you were to get Walter White and make him realise the error of his ways over what, 9 episodes? Yeah, yeah. You haven't got a bloody future. The game is fucking over. That's what it is.
This is the thing. I didn't want Sherlock to develop as a character. No. Particular. I want Sherlock to just be Sherlock. I don't really care why, like, the whole that last episode is so infuriating. It's basically about a sister who wants to get loved and attention from her brothers. Mm-hmm. And does so by, how many people does she kill? At least 6 people die.
She does so by putting them in.
Go on, Ben.
What's that movie where you know they basically Saw. Are in a house and Saw? She basically does Saw.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I get fucked up about is that.
But what they're trying to
cheap as that. There is this series has been as cheap as going. Oh, okay, let's have Sherlock versus Jimmy Savile. Oh, okay, now let's have Sherlock and Saw. I mean, it is fuck me. Like, work harder.
But aren't they trying to tell us that she was behind all of Moriarty's plans? Like, she's the one that put Moriarty on Sherlock's scent in the first place. So therefore, everything that Moriarty does, we have to track.
So we've got to go back again in the same way that.
No, I don't think that's true.
She's joined forces with him halfway through.
That's right. After he's already started on him.
He's already started. All right.
But it's that thing of going, oh, everything you've just seen wasn't really happening, and then they did that with at the end of the second episode where they revealed the sister. You basically watched a 90-minute film, and then in the last 4 minutes went reveal, mm-hmm. and of like that wasn't him, and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, and it's all done.
No, hang on,
for the
Ben.
Big headline cliffhanger.
But the consequences were still real. But yeah.
Also, none of this matters, though, because it's a detective show.
And?
A detective show is just a series of crimes.
Yeah.
That's what a traditional one is. That's what Columbo is.
Yeah.
But actually, detective shows tend to fall. They tend to run into trouble when they start trying to do more than that, which is, I think, part of the problem with Sherlock.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
But you're asking for character progression as well, Ben, which is, I think, there's no point in that.
No. I'm not asking for character progression.
Be clear with what you're asking for.
No, I'm following Ben every step of the way. Where's the confusion? Right, Matt's asked a question of Ben there. Mel, you were asking of Ben a question. Let's ask him that question as well, and then Ben can defend himself against these people who do not understand the very simple point that he's making. Mel, what was your question?
Are you annoyed because Sherlock is not the one who solved the case, especially at the end of episode 2? Are you annoyed that it was Eurus herself who did the reveal and not Sherlock walking us through his process to the big reveal?
Yes, but not because of that specific one, because that wasn't the first or last time that I saw that happen. And I found it all quite in service of fans rather in service of a wider audience who were there to watch a Sherlock Holmes story.
I think that what's happening here is Ben is talking about the frustrations of watching how something has been structured and it's almost like you can see the whiteboard on the writer's room where they've gone, wouldn't it be great if we could tackle the subject of Jimmy Savile, which the second one was clearly about. I don't know how much you know about Jimmy Savile, Mel.
I have no idea this reference.
All right, there's this guy who...
I didn't know about this reference. Why is this Jimmy Savile?
Are you serious? Did you not notice the second...
Toby Jones.
Toby Jones.
Yeah, now you say it, I see it, but it didn't occur to me until you mentioned it. No.
Well, a Yorkshire accent.
Were you doing something else while you were watching it?
Did this strike Jamie and Jack as well? I was going to say it's Mel because she's American, but did you two?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. I really? Clicked onto it. Yeah.
I thought with everything they do, it's ham-fisted.
The difficult thing was as well because Jimmy Savile's crimes are so horrific. That then it made Toby Jones's character. You were just like, oh, he only killed people.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay, but who is this guy?
Mel.
Jimmy Savile was a broadcaster in the 70s and 80s who was later found out to have molested lots of kids.
And he even hosted a show that was all around kids and did loads of kids' hospital work. And we're talking about molesting hundreds. And he had, like, the keys to the hospital. He was given the keys to children's hospital. Pretty much everything that happened.
Oh, I did not know that. See, that now seems like a very obvious parallel.
Because the morgue was the whole thing.
The morgue as well.
Toby Jones actually held up the keys to the hospital and said they gave me the keys.
That was an obvious nod because that was
I didn't know that.
That subject, Mel, shook in the last few years, shook the BBC more than anything, and so it is interesting that Sherlock, the BBC sort of jewel in the crown, took on that subject. Because it was like, well, why not? And we can. But that's
let's not get bogged down in the meta.
Well, that's a whole meta of itself. But this is my point, that I think what Ben's talking about is, to me, I could see, like Ben saying, the whiteboard on the wall was so full of things like that and their personal story and their cliffhangers and their plot twists and their personal stories that it was never about the frickin' mystery. So even in this last one, the mystery is solved in a bizarre way. We've got this plane landing that isn't a plane. They wake up and they've been somehow flown to the house where they grew up. At that point, Mycroft just disappears out of the plot. We don't need him to end the story. He's somewhere else, Mycroft. Thingy's down a well. And it's all solved by him going and giving his sister a cuddle. And it's just so melodramatic and bullshit.
Even like the beginning of it, where the only way they can get Mycroft to admit he's got a sister is by dressing up as a clown and making the paintings bleed. It's like, what the fuck is going on here? Why are you doing this?
And that's very true. That is very true.
I have some positive things to say, but let's go now to huge Sherlock fan Jack.
Oh, hi, Jack.
Bring the joy back, Jack.
Well, I completely agree with everything that most people have said, to be honest, that this, from the Christmas special that was back in time up until this latest episode, it has been a load of personal emotional nonsense. The first three series I thought were excellent because, like you said, it was Sherlock going out and doing the groundwork, whereas this last episode I couldn't stand it, and especially the second episode, The Lion Detective, I was close to turning off. Something that I saw it was on The Independent, it was a review that said that this last episode, it almost felt like an episode of Black Mirror. But with the way it was done and the cliffhangers and the style of it, of being on a mental asylum on a secret location and then all of a sudden, like you said, being back at the family home, and it wasn't Sherlock being Sherlock, it was Sherlock being a family member and someone's brother rather than being the detective that he should be.
However, you know what, all I could think of was Skyfall when I was watching this episode.
Oh, it was James Bond. Yes. It was James Bond.
I mean,
the first bit was like a classic Connery Bond under a rock somewhere, and then the end was Skyfall. But at least, Jack, I think that your patience, because you liked the first series so much, I think your patience took you through the second series, and it actually got worse earlier than you think. I think that wedding episode and that stuff in that second series.
I have to admit.
Was series three.
Was that series three?
First six episodes. In the second season, there was Scandal in Belgravia, Hounds of the Baskervilles, and The Reichenbach Fall.
Oh, yeah.
And they were great.
Yeah.
They were great.
Really? Hound of the Baskervilles was a great episode.
Yeah, and there's a lot more good. There's a lot more good episodes. One of my favourite stories is the Valley of Fear, which is a really hard one to tell because half of it doesn't involve Sherlock. It's the only thing I've ever read that made me out loud go, "No way!" when the reveal happens. But the
Valley of Fear, which one was that?
It's one of the four short novelettes. So most of them are short
Jesus
stories.
Jesus Christ! What are we talking about that for? What's the podcast called? Crying out loud.
Well, because
Battles of Obscure Books.
No, it's not obscure. It's one of the Baskervilles. Baskervilles was one of those four. Valley of Fear was another. Point is, it went up its own arse too quickly. And they've shot themselves in the foot, maybe because they knew they couldn't get Benedict Cumberbatch for years.
Well,
but if this was in America, we'd be on Series 2, Episode 94, and it would be brilliant.
I think that's part of the problem as well. Like, I think the fact that they've got to do three episodes, an hour and a half long, when you get past the probably rather meaty and chunkier cases of Sherlock's, there are other great cases, but maybe they've not got the. They don't feel like they've got the weight to hold an hour and a half of television.
Yeah.
And so that's why it feels like as they've gone on, they've concentrated more on the relationships and gone more for twists and more for episodes that have no real genuine plot that happens in them, and almost like bypass the cases, and the hour and a half element has taken away. Like, if they'd done a lot of these episodes, they could have done this over 6-7 episodes and it would have felt a lot more fulfilling as a show. But it's just because of those hour and a half film. That's a film, basically.
Yeah. Why did they do that?
It's like that first episode. It's like a James Bond film as well. There are a lot of comments about the action in that. Like, they're trying to make an action thriller. They're not trying to make a mystery detective TV show. And it's just that's the issue.
Mel.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like with the whole sister thing, they just blew the load too quickly. It came out of nowhere, even though the episode itself seemed to go on a lifetime. The actual storyline came out of nowhere.
I'm always aware when Mel tries to say something and is cut off, because whenever I listen back to these podcasts,
Mel,
I always think she's the one that's backs down too quickly, maybe because she's not a boisterous man. Mel, what were you going to say? Anything?
It's often because whoever interrupts me actually is saying what I was about to say.
But, okay.
In this case, however, I quite liked the sister storyline. I wish that it had not been wrapped up so fast. I will say, I think that they could have stretched that into, if they had done that big reveal at the end of the last episode of the series, and then that could have been all of Series 5. Exploring all of that and
well, I think the thing is, though, that they know Series 5 isn't going to happen. And they know
no,
that.
It's not. This was clearly a wrap-up.
You know, it's blatantly the last thing. And I really liked Sister 2. I thought it was a great storyline. But the whole thing of it revolving around Sherlock having to break through some personal mystery. The mystery is around his personal life and backstory, or somebody else's backstory, or just another fucking backstory. New thing.
A perfect example of that, right, was when the drone, you know, when the drone came in with the grenade on top of it.
That was a good scene.
Right. That was a really good scene.
Now,
lovely.
It's a great scene, and they go, and it's great while they're working out the maths, and they're going, okay, I'm going to go for that window, you're going to go for that window, it'll take 3 seconds to go through there. We've got to wait till Mrs. Hudson goes to the back of the house for 8 seconds. And Mycroft says, well, you're quicker than me, why don't you go for the stairs? Oh, that'll be mitigated by the distance between here and the window, so you go for the stairs. Brilliant. And then, always, three extra lines of bullshit. Mycroft, I always thought you were great when you played Lady Chatterley or whatever.
Oh, get out. Oh, that was fun. That was nice.
Funny.
Oh,
that was
look, that it was an amusing line. I'm not saying that it wasn't funny. I'm just saying that's an example. Just like The Rock, I was quite excited by The Rock because at least unlike the wedding scene, it wasn't just people talking about backstory. I went, oh, great. Okay, we got a puzzle. But then you're in the room, you solve a puzzle, and then it becomes all the emotional stuff. Well, he's family now.
The thing is, though, Harold, that I agree with you because in one sense, because those lines in that room about him playing that part in the play, and that's enough. That's all I need to know about them being brothers.
A gag.
That could have stopped there.
Yes.
That backstory about them being brothers. And then I didn't need to go through a whole exploration of their actual brotherly history again for the umpteenth time. But this time with new information that Sherlock couldn't remember.
It's always
like,
the 20% extra that you always get at the end of each section of dialogue or every scene. That's what annoys me. Even the point when Watson was about to shoot. So Mycroft isn't going to shoot the guy to save his wife. Okay, fine. Watson's going to.
Sorry, Art Malik was great in this.
Art Malik was fine in this.
He was fine, and then they're about to shoot. He's about to shoot him, and we know Watson's not going to be able to do it. That's pretty clear, but okay, so he's going to do it. And he stops him twice, and that's great. And then he taps him on the shoulder to say, "You sure you're okay? You sure about this?" And it becomes so long. And
that was too much.
It's just always 20% too much. And then they go to the next room, the next puzzle. Those guys dangling down on the other side of the window was like Austin Powers. It was just nonsense.
And you know what? Well, yeah, but they've got 90 minutes to film. They've got loads of time to film. They've got to drag this shit out.
But the weird thing is, though, that when you get to the denouement, it always happens so fast.
Yeah.
It's like pushing out a big shit.
Exactly.
And it takes ages.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I can't believe you just put those two phrases together.
Now, Jenny Moy is like a big shit. And that's my point. It's like, suddenly, it's almost like they get to the end of
things. You could call it a sheer log.
They suddenly realised that, oh yeah, there was a case to wrap up as well. There was something to solve, wasn't there? Well, actually, we haven't got a clever answer. We've got an emotional answer.
Well, you see, this is the problem with the show, because they're all about, oh, he's a genius. Oh, and his sister's even more of a genius. So they've got to have these genius plots that they've come up with because, of course, yeah, they're geniuses. But then you've got to realise that the people writing it, they're not geniuses.
Yeah, but guess what, Jamie? Guess what?
Not genius.
There's a Bible-sized book of short stories with the genius in it.
Most crimes do boil down to emotional motivation.
They do, but not in Sherlock Holmes's. Sherlock's, that's the motivation for committing the crime.
But
the story of Sherlock is a clever man solving that.
Most crimes don't constantly and persistently reveal backstory about the person that's trying to solve
that,
them again.
That
and again
was a little
again
too much.
Can you imagine?
Every crime.
Yeah, exactly. Every crime has to reveal a brand new backstory that nobody's ever thought about before to show how clever we are.
How quickly
I always feel
would
like they can't elevate themselves to like the great, like, you know, the great TV writers. You know, they're really working hard to try and sort of get the fans whipped up into a sort of frenzy, but they never manage to have the bottle to just
do the job.
You know, just step up to make it really great, like,
or just do the job. Imagine,
think about mysteries and thrillers.
Yeah.
How many are out there that you can think of in film or TV that are really, truly satisfying? Because for me, that list is very, very short.
Columbo.
Columbo's different because it's got a world of its own.
Yeah, but imagine on episode 5 of Columbo that we actually see his wife.
In Columbo, doesn't he, that you always get the killer's always known from the start, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's always that one last, one more thing.
Yes, but
and the reason why Columbo is good is because there's shitloads of them.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, one of the things about Columbo is they very purposely never, ever, ever show his wife or his personal life, because
leave the emotional thing aside. I'm just talking about how difficult it is to write a satisfying mystery that's so big, because the bigger the things get, and the way they've written Sherlock, they have to keep getting bigger because, you know, for it to go somewhere, it can't just be constant the small puzzles like the very first one or the one in the museum with the Chinese mafia kind of thing. Those things are too small. So it has to get bigger and bigger and bigger.
No, it doesn't.
And what I'm saying is that when you get those kind of colossal plots where there's going to be one thing that unravels it all, there are very few times when that has been done successfully ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
well,
this
that
has been a
boils down to the whole BBC thing of just doing 3 episodes per series. It's the same with Luther, Peaky Blinders, anything. They go from 0 to 60, and all of a sudden, this outrageous storyline has come from nowhere. And it is.
You're right, Jack. I'm passionate about it because it shouldn't be. We shouldn't live in a world where the Bill can run for 20 series and Sherlock only has 9 episodes and has spent its load. That's the point. You're absolutely right. They shouldn't have given themselves a canvas that's that large, because, or at least carry on with the case. I don't see what the problem is in carrying on series like the first one. We know what we're going to get.
Well, actually, you know what? I mean, I said that just now, but I would have preferred them to do that as well.
Yeah. And so they have got themselves into this corner because they've decided that what they need to do is keep exploring the backstory. And we've got a good cross-section of... We normally, this selection of people on this podcast disagree on most things, or somebody does. We've got a focus group that spans thousands of miles, and we all agree that we don't give a shit about Watson's wife and what Sherlock's emotional state was at breakfast.
That's not true.
Howell. You didn't listen to Matt and I.
You said at the beginning,
Mel. I'm fine with those things. I don't mind those things.
What, you don't... Mel, I thought you said at the beginning that you thought Watson's wife was a waste of time.
They wasted her storyline.
Oh, they did.
It started out very interesting, but they wasted it.
Okay. So you're saying you like the one in the parallel universe that doesn't exist?
I'm saying that I wish we had been able to spend more time examining her past life as an assassin.
Yeah, but why? That's another series. Surely that's just...
It is another series, and that's what I have to sort of mitigate my expectations about, because I had a note here about Molly Hooper and the complete disservice to her character.
But that is a character that
because this isn't about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I know what you mean, though. Like, her character is almost used to just step on every now and then if they need to do it with Sherlock. It was horrible, but at the end she's like smiling away. I just feel like that. Yeah, I agree with that. I didn't care about the wife plot that much.
But she's just one example of all of those plots. Russell's been on the podcast a couple of times. Friend of mine, he said to me this week, Moffat has done with this what he's done with Doctor Who. And if you take both of those, the subject matter itself is difficult to explain. And what they've done is then tried to explain a shitload of invented stuff that's put on top of that for the fans, perhaps. Mm-hmm. But that you spend so much time explaining that you don't actually do the job of the thing in the first place. You don't actually do. Go on,
I was going to ask you guys about that, because I've only watched like 2 episodes of Doctor Who. I know, horrible, but I just couldn't get into it. But I've heard so many sort of offhand comments about, oh, that's just Stephen Moffat. And is it a chronic problem of his that he starts out well, he ends up, he veers into giving the fans what he thinks they want, well, what they need.
Yeah, it's just so dense.
In a way, it's not even that dense. Like, it's more style over substance, because, like, a lot of it is just show. He's really good at the flashy stuff. He's good at the flamboyant characters and the charismatic, villains. And he's brilliant at the quick one-liners. But the actual depth, the plot, the meaty stuff, he's not very good at that, I don't think. And I think that Doctor Who, I used to really like it as well and watched it a lot with Lauren. The characters are really interesting, but it just becomes more and more like looking more and more introverted and more in-jokes for the fans. And it's all about sort of the showy stuff that he can do with the script. It's less and less about what actually happens in the episode.
Like, you just...
Aren't those the best things about Sherlock, though?
No.
Yeah, but in some ways they are. But you want them to just be offhand things that you kind of come to every now and then. You don't want them to be the things that are the focus of the episode. You want them to be like throwaway lines that you love, but you kind of like, they're not the main bit of the show. But they're the bits that stick with you. Like, it's like he's gone with the shows. The fans have gone, oh, we really like all these little bits with Mrs. with the landlady. And he's gone, oh, I've got loads of bits with her. And he's just like, he takes the bits that you like having little snippets of and leave you wanting more, and actually indulges in them. And you just think, well, actually, no, we didn't need to do that. It was nice just getting a little taste of that world.
That's exactly it. He's giving you like 5 packets of party rings, which we can all agree we would eat every one of the five packets, but we would feel sick afterwards, and that's the problem that we face in life.
I don't know what those are.
Delicious.
Cheetos.
It's a bit like with the Irene Adler thing at the end of episode two.
Yeah.
So I got a text from Irene Adler, and I was really glad that they didn't bring her back for episode three, because that for me would have ruined it. But that, like you were saying, that little offhand moment where it's a reference to her, I was really glad to see it. But then I was even more glad that she didn't just magically appear on this island out of nowhere.
But those are, that's, at least that's a plot from the original thing, which is kind of, you would expect to, you would have expected them to go into. You've got all these personal plots that have been invented by Moffat and Gatiss, and then you've also got the agendas. So the agenda of the long running thing of, are they gay? Do they, how much do they love each other? What's their relationship? The personal relationship, Watson and his wife. Then in this one, there were comments about, you know, that Watson's wife was given lots to say, and then almost in defence, they defended themselves by saying, well, it's time I was given something to say. It was just something like, women aren't, there's not enough of that. Women aren't given enough to say in the media, kind of thing. There's all these modern agendas that they're putting in, and you want to go, yes, that's great. Well done for being on the zeitgeist and talking about issues that matter, but this, it's not necessarily the place where we're going to talk about them. This is a series about a detective and a bloke who lives, it's two guys who live in a flat trying to solve crimes. I wonder how many
people...
Yeah,
they don't have the background. They don't have the credibility to discuss those kinds of issues.
Yeah, and you can't really...
They can talk about mental health.
Yeah, yeah.
But they decide not to do that. They decide to just, oh, he's, you know, let's have this elaborate scheme to bring, to save John, which I knew practically from the beginning that's what was going on.
But I even think that they've got the agenda wrong from the books. Like, I think that there's always been a reading of Sherlock Holmes that he is phenomenally annoying and phenomenally extrovert and pretentious. And actually, I always read it as being, we the reader, whilst we look at him through John Watson's eyes, we are supposed to think that he sees the world correctly, a little bit like a stand-up comic. The people around him who are annoying are arguably being annoying. So when somebody comes in and says something dull, he says, you're being dull. He lives in the way that we would like to. He just says it as it is, you know. And he could actually be quite a nice human being with that. There's this reading that everybody is, that he's offensive, that he's callously or unknowingly offensive by doing that, when actually it could actually be disarming. And so I think that's part of what builds into this whole smokescreen of like, oh, we've got this guy who, is he on a spectrum? Is he, do I want to throttle him? We all want to kill Sherlock. Yeah, anyway. So I've always felt let down by it. Still, I enjoyed these last three more than I enjoyed the three before. I thought there was at least some fun in there and some funny lines and stuff. I just couldn't believe the whole...
What are your favourite episodes, just out of interest? What, does everyone have one that they like, at least?
First couple I liked... probably the best, and I enjoyed the last one until the last 20%, you know, until the wrap up. I really wanted them to land that plane. I really wanted the plane to be friggin'
really
landed.
You didn't know that was Eurus?
No,
it had to be. How could it not have been her? It took them like 5 hours to go through all of those different things that she had set up.
I'll tell you how it could not be. Because she also managed to dangle three businessmen still in their suits out of a window. She also managed to fly Sherlock in a stage set to his home house and land in the field.
Sherlock fell off the top of a building and survived, and we still don't know how.
I know, but point is, if Moriarty and her are supposed to have staged this phenomenal thing, they could easily have hijacked an aircraft. In fact, out of all of it, that would have been the easy bit, probably.
It was her on the phone using a little girl voice. That's it. All of those shots that we saw on the plane, that was all in Sherlock's head. That didn't happen. That didn't exist.
Well, and you're saying you figured that out before it was revealed?
Yes.
I did as well,
What?
I thought that was obvious. I mean, I really did, because that's how they do it. I've made it a habit to try and figure out the lies before they come out. I'm not bad at it.
But that is a physical lie. That is showing the audience something. If we only heard the audio, then that's all right to whip the curtain out.
Oh, I'm not saying it's
okay.
But
it's always Sherlock creating those illusions, isn't it? And so for the first time, he gets fooled by something that he usually pulls on other people.
But he also got the Mind Palace, remember, with Charles Magnuson?
Oh, yeah.
That was all in Sherlock's head.
Ah, you're right. Richard. Well, that's another thing I don't like about the series.
Stupid Mind Palace, that really pisses me off.
You know what, Hal? I think you're still watching this series as though it's from John's point of view.
No, I'm not.
And I think it's really from Sherlock's point of view, and that's what's tripping you up.
I'm not. I'm watching it as a customer, and I'm going into shop, and I'm saying, what I really loved about the original, Conan Doyle wrote that character based on a lecturer at university who was incredibly factual. It was all about the probable will win. Ben has to go now. Ben, goodbye.
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 Bye, Ben.
Bye-bye. He wrote the character on this professor who saw the world as whatever the answer is that's left is the answer, regardless of how probable it is. So it was all about probability and deduction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is not what this is about. It just isn't.
How does it come about that? Things. What are you talking about? That's all it's about.
It isn't. He says those things, but it's not. The majority of our real estate, the majority of our time is spent caring about things that are to do with subplots, to do with his wife being in the frigging Secret Service or all of that nonsense.
I don't think you can make a series out of him just doing the deductive thing over and over again. It wouldn't work.
Well, I think it would get really good work.
Midsummer Murders is on series 19, so.
Yeah, and the original Sherlock.
Didn't make it good.
Matt, the original Granada Sherlock, which it doesn't make it good, but that ran and ran and ran. I mean,
That's not an argument, though.
That you said is, you essentially said you can't run a detective series for very long. There's lots of people things that go against that.
No, I'm saying it can't be good if you do that.
Well, I think there are lots of examples where it is good. Detective series have been quite popular in television.
Yes, I know they're popular, but this is a very specific trick. And the way Sherlock will unravel how he understands where someone has come from is fun, but if it's the crux of your series, then it's going to get boring very quickly.
Oh, and 100%, of course. It's not just, you can't watch a maths problem, I agree.
Exactly, yeah, that's what
I'm saying. However, the ratio of when you're reading it, of course, this guy is fascinating, and the reason he's fascinating is he gives away very little. On this, by the end of 9 episodes, pretty much explored him and turned him inside out to the point that you don't need to do any more if you don't want to.
I think that's modern drama, man.
I think that's okay. I'm okay with it being over.
Well, I'm not. I'm still waiting for them to tell all the stories that exist that Conan Doyle came up with that are bloody amazing. You know, give us a bit of backstory. Do it in half an hour. Give us some backstory. Make us intrigued by this guy. I want them to reboot it now like bloody Spider-Man.
Well, I can see the argument for that, but I think what they did with the Watson-Holmes relationship has been really good, and those two guys have done a fantastic job.
They've been very good actors, and I think you should play the next Watson, Matt.
I would love to be as good as Martin Freeman, but he's excellent, actually. I've come to appreciate Martin Freeman a lot more in the last couple of years. I just think that it's very, very hard, the task that they have to do. I don't think it's as simple as some of the stuff we're saying. And and I also think the emotional backstory stuff, I found it very welcome, personally, for the most part. And I'm not saying they did it all well, but I think that's the problem, not the inclusion in the first place. I think it's just the actual execution, not the plan so much.
It overtook them like a fungus. I think it should be there. But it became...
No, because I would have loved for this episode, this final episode, to turn out well. It just didn't. I had no problem about it being his Skyfall. It just didn't finish properly. It wasn't good in the end.
But the ideas were sound.
I liked the idea of this sort of the arch supervillain being his sister that he's repressed out of his emotions because she was so fucking terrible and murdered his best friend and he's a kid. Spoilers!
Right? But, how did we only spend like 2 minutes on that? Why was that not? You know, I think episode 3 should have been episode 2, and then the last episode should have been really diving deep into all of that and everything that she's done. And
or even better, episode 2 should have been episode 1. Molly should Mary should have just stayed alive, and they shouldn't have just killed her off in this really strange way.
What was that about? She didn't even leave the show. She was still there. She could have done exactly the same thing, still been alive, but they had to cause a break between Sherlock and Watson. That's all it was.
Yeah, which again, it just feels like they've played every trick. They've played every soap opera trick that they can. It's done.
And I didn't even believe that, though. I didn't believe that Watson would have...
No, neither did I. Nonsense. And that's where your thesis falls apart, Matthew, because it's right to have... you are absolutely right. The point is that you look at this guy and you go, he is intriguing. The intrigue comes from the sniff of what's going on behind the curtain with this guy. The curtain was wide open for so much, at least 50% of the bloody time. Don't you agree, Jamie?
Couldn't agree more, Howell.
Great, Matt's wrong. And on that,
I don't think it was thrown open that wide.
What? Are you serious? There was so much time spent.
I couldn't have been more disappointed that the reason Sherlock's like Sherlock is because his friend died and was killed by his sister. I just thought, I don't want
to. That's not the reason he's like that.
No, that's.
Oh, come on. I mean, it is kind of.
No, well, it's not. I mean, he's like that anyway. But that happened. That also happened.
He had, it was a traumatic.
But that was the whole point, wasn't it? That he can't develop friendships because his first ever friend was thrown down a well by his sister. Isn't that the idea that he can't develop any relationship?
No, no, no. I think you've connected some weird dots there, Jamie.
Well, that's the way I saw it.
Otherwise, why is it there then? Otherwise, just a little backstory about his sister. In which case, that's bollocks amount of time to spend on it. Surely, Jamie's.
But I thought it was nonsense as well how Mycroft somehow managed to manipulate Sherlock into not being able to remember his sister entirely, completely wiped the memory of it.
Yeah.
Was it Mycroft who did it?
I thought Sherlock did that himself.
Kind of helped things along. Yeah, I thought Mycroft rewrote his own memories.
No, right? Mycroft rewrote his memories. He said, I have programmed him.
Have to watch that again because I thought Eurus said you talking to Sherlock. You wrote me out of your memory. You completely rewrote the story.
No, well, Mycroft said he did it. And she
I
said,
think he helped. I think he helped. Yes, because I think that's Mycroft's skill is mental manipulation.
But again, what the hell are we doing talking about Mycroft and his sister? What on earth is this world?
They're part of the family. They're part of this genius family. Was anybody else watching that? The scene where they tell the parents that Eurus is still alive, and thinking, how did these three? You know, geniuses, one of them an era defining genius, come from these two people.
My favorite line was when they said she had an hour on Twitter and predicted the next three terrorist attacks.
Yes, I really like that.
You guys, I actually did a story on a scientist, an analytical scientist, who developed an app that can do that and has sold it to the U.S. government.
Wow.
So.
There you go.
I mean, if her brain is supposed to be something like a computer, I totally bought that.
Yeah, but okay, that the drone moment, the some of the predicaments like the gunshot moment before it went on a little bit too long, those things, those are the things that we remember. Oh, putting his hand up against the glass. Come close to the glass. Come closer to the glass.
That freaked me out.
Brilliant.
Yeah, that was good.
I tell you though, that's the moment I figured out that she was the voice on. She was the little girl on the plane.
Gee, what? That wasn't even.
That was the moment that I realized. Oh, she's manipulating all of this. She's the little girl on the plane.
But they hadn't introduced the plane yet, Mel.
Yes, they had.
It was introduced at the start of the episode.
Yeah, she was right at the very start.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, those wonderful things, they're the things we want, aren't they? They are the things that we don't want to be going, oh, what was his parents look like? What did his second cousin twice removed have breakfast? Really?
Speak for yourself, Howell. I want it all. But it's less manic. That's my complaint about this season, is it was just too manic for me. It was too...
Again, the whiteboard was full of shit. Yeah. There are other things. Films have less going on.
Then it would have been fine.
Yeah. There are a lot of action films, James Bond films. There are a lot of films that have less bullshit going on than this. Jack, what were you going to say?
I really enjoyed the scene where Mycroft was insulting Sherlock and trying to get Sherlock to therefore shoot Mycroft and keep John alive. I really enjoyed seeing Mycroft.
Yeah, and I actually thought there were moments where Mark Gatiss was like, I really appreciated what a good actor he is. Like, I thought he's really good, isn't he?
And that's the thing.
He came out of his shell more this episode.
That's it. When you read in the books and you go, but a paragraph without something like that happening, you go, you're disappointed. Because they are so clever. That's the stuff that you go, oh, this is so good.
But didn't we like that because it showed us that Mycroft is always protecting his little brother?
Exactly. So it's fine. If it's,
so why are we complaining about emotion being a part of this?
Yeah.
I am complaining that emotion on its own, devoid of that, nothing to do with the mystery, nothing to do with the problem, and acres of it until I'm vomiting. That's the problem. I'm happy with some, but...
I don't know what you're talking about, but anyway, never mind.
I want so much more...
That's not how I watched it. So.
I want more magic tricks. And
but I would love for them to just re-modernize some of the old mysteries like they did with Baskervilles.
Yeah, they should make a whole series out of it.
Even though the Hound of the Baskervilles was a load of bollocks.
Wait, the episode in the series or the book?
Yeah, the new episode was a load of nonsense.
Oh, Jack.
There you go. No accounting for taste. Well, I suggest you all go and read the books. And as Matt has just agreed, in conclusion, somebody should make a series about Sherlock Holmes. That would be great. Thank you, everybody. And next week, Goliath. Matt, have you watched any? Mel, have you watched any?
No.
No, but my dad's been trying to get me to watch that, so it's probably not very good.
Oh, no. Do it. Watch it. It's great.
I'll watch the first episode. Yeah.
Mel, you've just freaked out by Billy Bob, is that right?
Yes. You know how.
You didn't like him in Fargo either, did you?
When we were talking about him the last time,
and I met him,
two days later, he was performing at the little theater behind my house.
No way.
Guys.
Melly's brilliant.
And he could come there anytime.
He could.
He's a great...
Like, literally, I can see the theater from my back window.
He owns that theater. He's got the keys.
There's like a scary clown, and... Yeah, he's going to insert family videos into the... How did we not talk about that scene where Sherlock was completely messing with Mycroft?
Oh.
We did talk about it briefly. I liked it.
Which one was that? Before.
At the beginning.
At the beginning, when Mycroft is watching the film noir and all of a sudden there's shots from home videos and then it says, I'm back. And
if you like that, you should watch The League of Gentlemen, which is Mark Gatiss. Oh, right. Well, he clearly wrote that bit, I think. It was very good.
Anyway.
Listen, y'all.
That's a Billy Bob for me.
Mel, Billy Bob is a great American actor. You should watch Goliath.
I disagree.
He's brilliant. He's brilliant. Come watch it. Maybe this will change your mind. Maybe. Who knows? Thank you, everybody. That was an impassioned melange to start 2017. An impassioned blancmange. So thank you very much.
Oh, I've got to say thank you to Dr. Sam Knowles for tweeting us/me on Twitter playing into me for not liking the Muppets thing.
I mean, just nobody can get over. What? Someone else said it to me. No one can get over the moment where Jack went, "Who's the one with a face like a dick, a gonzo?"
Yeah, I actually tweeted him back.
It's not that you didn't like it, so you didn't even know what the Muppets were.
Yeah. When did this happen?
Matt, go back a couple of episodes. You will hear Jack.
It's the thing with
saying things like the Muppets Christmas Carol. You can see why it's not on TV every Christmas.
Oh, no.
It's not very good. It is on every Christmas. Jack. And it's the best film ever made. So stick it up your ass.
Hey, Jack, just so you know, I'm kind of on your side there. So.
What?
Thank you, Mel. What's going on here?
Wow.
It's the puppet thing.
And yeah, by the way, I doubt any of you listened to my Christmas special.
No,
I've listened about the letter.
Yeah, about the letter. Thanks, Jack.
Did you get a reply?
I haven't got a reply yet, and I was just going to tell people who actually listen to this podcast that that very emotional podcast that I did on Christmas Eve, I haven't yet received a reply from the old lady that I wrote the letter to. So thank you to everybody for listening to that and caring so deeply.
You're going to broadcast this part, are you?
Certainly bloody am. Jesus, expose you as the heathens that you are. Oh, fucking Sherlock. I'm just so disappointed. I just want it to be great. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Goodbye.
Bye. Goliath next week.
Bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.